And then there's the whole other side of that. Say, and you're a hell of a cook, but if you don't understand what it takes to...
And it may be the hardest thing I teach people to do, is how to properly...
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Smokeless. I'm Nick from Stanley's Famous Pit Barbecue in Tyler, Texas. That's in East Texas, for you guys that don't know. I'm here with my best buddies, the two greatest pals in the whole world, of Justin Forton from Pecan Lodge in Dallas, Fort Worth, and Wayne Miller from the Cathedral of Smoke, Louis Miller Barbecue in Taylor, Texas. Boys, what is happening? It's good to see you again.
Hello, hello.
Y'all doing all right?
Good afternoon. Great to see you. Great to hear you.
As you all know from last week's episode, we attempted to interview the legendary Sam Jones, and the internet had a different agenda.
Sam, you look like you're 10 years older, man.
I'm getting older on this podcast.
We actually tried and rescheduled Sam for today, but we got a text message a while ago, and I'm just going to read it. Guys, as bad as I hate to ask, I need to reschedule. I've had some sort of bug since yesterday that has left me feeling like a bowl of assholes.
I mean, you're guaranteed to hear some kind of anecdote or phrase like that from Sam anytime you have a conversation. I've never known anybody.
Dude, every 5 minutes. But, it's like this conscious stream of maxims and anecdotes. Mm-hmm. It never ends. The guy is hilarious. Yeah, I'm looking forward to finally getting him on.
Me too. We're gonna keep trying. We will line up. So in lieu of Sam Jones part two today, which actually would have been like part 52, based on how all that went, we will get that rescheduled sometime. Or I mean, shit, we may have to just go to North Carolina and go do that one in person. Maybe everybody thinks they can work in a barbecue joint, especially according to when you read the reviews. People cook a brisket at home. They think they can cook a brisket at a barbecue joint. You eat at a barbecue joint, and you think you can do a better job, you reckon. And this episode will tell you exactly what you need to know to work in a barbecue restaurant, whether that's as a pit master, front of house, or even if you want to set up your own spot. Plus, we've got a brand new Plate or Hate, where we review your cooks. Our inbox has been filling up. Thanks for sending in your questions, comments, concerns, hate mail, a lot of love letters to Justin Forton. Sorry, guys. He's taken. hello@smokelesspodcast.com. Send them in. Keep them coming. The first question from Jason Grant. Guys, I just finished an episode where you're asking for questions. Mine is, why don't barbecue restaurants have salt and pepper on the tables or at the bar? It drives me nuts. I've started to carry salt in my car to take inside whenever I go to a barbecue place. I like a little salt on the brisket after it's sliced, and I usually have to add more salt to my potato salad too. Also, isn't it leaning towards being arrogant to think you seasoned your food perfectly so the customer would never need to add any more? So why provide it? Thanks in advance. Jason Grant. Well, Jason, I don't know where you've been eating, but I've got salt and pepper on every single table of my restaurant. How about you guys?
Forever. The same salt and pepper I put on my brisket.
Mm-hmm.
Same for us. I mean, honestly, I'm with him. It's a big pet peeve for me if I go into a restaurant and they don't have salt and pepper. And I think the same thing.
Yeah, not just a barbecue joint, like any restaurant. I think
anybody cooking does their best to season things perfectly, but that's a really good example of where your personal preference really just makes a huge difference. And everybody has a different tolerance for salt and all kinds of stuff.
That's right.
Yep.
Well, Jason, thanks for writing in, but we don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I mean, listen, here's three restaurants. If you eat barbecue, go to one of these three and you won't run into that problem.
Yeah, we got you covered, bro. I have salt and pepper.
Do y'all charge extra for salt and pepper?
Yeah, know. $20.
Oh, well,
not yet.
No. Yeah. No. I mean, it's not fancy. We use the plastic disposable ones that you used to see on the tables at McDonald's.
Mm-hmm.
We just use this.
Yeah.
But they're on every table.
Mm-hmm.
paper towels, salt and pepper, barbecue sauce, because we're in East Texas, a bar menu.
Yep. Check, 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 and check.
We got toothpicks in addition and hot sauce.
Killer. I like it. It's like it's Louisiana hot sauce,
right? It is a Louisiana hot sauce.
And your toothpicks are in that, in like the old, like the Parmesan shaker with the big holes in it.
No.
No?
They're in.
They used to be, right?
They're in the emptied out Louisiana hot sauce bottle.
That's right.
Even better. Even better.
We repurpose everything, baby.
Everything.
Yeah.
And you know, controversially, what do people give you shit about your barbecue sauce, Wayne?
Of course. What we've had is almost like a French dip.
Right.
It's very similar, right? Except it's more tomato based, but it has basically the same basic ingredients as a dip would. And that's how it's used. I mean, it's very thin, oniony, salt, pepper. It's got some beef base in it, water, lots of water. It's a hydration fluid is really what it is. And it's just a, you know, an amplifier of such for the seasonings that we're already carrying on in the rub. But it's been called, especially of late, and I say of late, say last 10 to 15 years, it's been called every disgusting thing you can imagine. Toilet water, dish water, you know, it's not been embraced as well as it was locally. All the old farmers and ranchers and, you know, blue collar people who've been eating there forever, they call it gravy, and they pour that shit on everything. They pour it on the potato salad, on the coleslaw. They dip their bread in it. You know, I think it's
delicious.
I shoot it straight. You know, when I was a kid, my father wouldn't let me eat anything off the block when I worked there as a kid. So my grandfather's like, come here, I'll show you. I want to show you something. So he grabbed a piece of bread and he cupped it in his hand, you know, like this. And he took a ladle full of that dip, and it had pepper and it had onion pieces in it. And he drizzled it over it, ran it over at an angle so the bread would catch the pepper and the onion. And he just folded it up and said, eat that.
Yeah.
And so starting about age 8, that became my go-to snack. And it's just, you know, one of those things when you're young, you build an affinity for, and certainly, yeah, I love that stuff.
How do you eat that for nostalgic purposes on a regular basis?
I just shoot it, man. I mean, like I'll get a 4-ounce cup of it and I'll just drink it. You know, it just, damn. If I'm feeling a little hungry, I mean, still in the middle of lunch or something, I'll just shoot one of those and I'm good to go.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm down with it 100%. Not everybody else is though. They like the thicker stuff if they like it at all, you know? I still try to convince them, just don't put anything on it.
Right.
But you're not going to convince people of that.
It's funny to me that there's that much of a debate over barbecue sauce styles or even, I mean, is it even part of the discussion right now about sauce or no sauce? Cause I remember like back in the day, you know, some places didn't have sauce or they're like, you know, we're not going to do sauce or whatever. It was kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It was Kreitz. It was all no sauce and no forks and, you know, like Dick's Last Resort.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think it's part of the discussion anymore. I really don't. I think most people have adopted it. Most purveyors are like, well, so many people ask for it. We have to come up with something just so there's an option. And now everybody gets it, you know, I mean, everybody takes it, and whether they use it or not, most people do. Kind of, you know, it's a shame in a way, but you know, everybody has their own way, I guess.
But you in a bottle, you guys have like a sweeter tomato-y like barbecue sauce that you were selling, right?
Yeah, we have a couple of we developed two sweeter sauces when we introduced pulled pork. That and baby back ribs. when we were doing both of those, I needed a base and a sauce for those. So we developed a sweet sauce for the pork, and a jalapeno version of that, because we just needed it. And then we have a savory, thicker sauce too. But I never eat them. I mean, like I did some lamb for a group last week, and they braise in the jalapeno sauce, the honey jalapeno sauce. And it's delicious as all get out, but it's like, fuck. I mean, you know, it's like 500 calories per ounce, you know, it's ridiculously sweet. But yeah, I don't, you know, I'm just not enamored with it. Sauce is sauce. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It has its place. Just, I'd prefer it not on my brisket. Or especially not on my beef.
I love trying it at places, though. I love, like, if I go to a new barbecue place and they've got a bunch of different sauces, I love to try a little bit of each one just to see what they're doing, you know, and if I can tell if they did it, like, from scratch or if it's doctored up Cattleman's.
Yeah, that's the MO on this side over here. You go in somewhere and they've got 12 different kinds of barbecue sauce. That's too much for me.
Yeah,
but I'm with you. I try them all.
Mm-hmm.
This next one's controversial, guys. Our homie Terry Williams says, and he included a screenshot, which actually, now that I'm thinking about this, I saw a video of this from Jack's Barbecue.
I saw
Jack's Barbecue on Instagram saying to cook brisket fat side down. I've sent a screenshot. I've never tried it, and now I feel confused. And I don't know. Where is Jack's?
There's one in Seattle.
Oh, is that Jack Timmons?
Yeah.
Jack's Barbecue says, do you smoke a brisket fat side up or fat side down? Well, we do it both ways. You may have noticed in one of our last videos that we smoke our briskets fat side down. We do this for the first 8 hours of the cook. We used to smoke them fat side up with the thinking that the fat cap melted and dripped through the meat. Science has since proven that wrong. Cooking fat side down for those first 8 hours helps protect the meat. Once that fat cap renders and starts to get nice and mushy, we flip it over and move it to a hotter section of the smoker to develop that nice dark bark you know and love. And yes, it is Jack's Barbecue in Seattle.
I think Ernest Cervantes, I think he cooks upside down. I think he put fat cap down.
We start fat cap down and flip about halfway through.
Did not know that.
What is your reasoning?
I think the fat cap acts as a shield, a buffer from the heat, and you're less likely to get the burn, kind of like hard edges on the bottom of that lean part of the brisket on the bottom, you know, so you can run it a little bit hotter in the beginning and you've got that cushion of fat to kind of absorb that and then flip it over and let it finish.
I've never done that.
Really?
Yeah.
I think Jack might have learned that from me. Maybe we're the only two that do it.
Yeah, I've never done that. I've had pictures texted to me from friends who were cooking, and their briskets were upside down. And I just said, hey, it's upside down. But yeah, like I say about everything, that's what makes you happy. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. Clearly it works.
Because
mm-hmm. Justin, your brisket's dank as hell.
Gracias, amigo.
Wayne, try it tomorrow on the dragon.
The fucking dragon.
Might be a game changer for you with that fire breather.
Oh, man. I need like 6 inches of fat just off the point, you know? It just...
Like brisket chicharrones.
Yeah, it just... Yeah, right? It just beats the shit out of everything. It's so harsh that we have to rotate like every 30 minutes.
Wow.
So much for if you're looking, you ain't cooking, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
That shit doesn't apply to me.
Was it always that way? Even in the original brick pit before it burned down, did it act the same way? Or is it just new to this version?
No. And Dad cooked a lot hotter. Like Dad would have briskets on by 3:30 in the morning. He'd have them off by 10:30. No shit. They were done in 7 hours.
Wow.
And we did that for the first like 4 years until we had a huge fire. And then I slowed it all down. I'm like, we're not taking that risk again. I was increasingly finding people less familiar with fire and fire management, and just they lacked a certain respect for what fire could do. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that kind of explosive environment, you know, it's not so much that coals or flame is going to jump the firewall and get into the grease catch or the grease bin. It's just getting the temperature up to a combustion temperature, and you build a bonfire in there, and you know, all it takes is a little bit of airflow and you got yourself a fire for sure. Mm-hmm. One, especially in those old pits where, you know, there's breaches everywhere. There's no shutting it down and suffocating it. It's just
right.
And the first thing I told him, as soon as I saw what happened, I'm like, call the fire department. I mean, you know, what? There's nothing else we can do. Just call the fire department. You call them. You did it. You call them.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, very interesting to not expect that feedback from the smokeless crew.
Yeah.
Well, you never know what answer you're going to get unless you ask the question.
For sure. So you think, but Justin, you feel that your product is better now. So have you always done that, or is it, that's something you started?
I mean, that it's been like that. It's been like that since very, very early on in the beginning. That was one of the first things that I changed. One of the first, because I started with the fat cap up, cooking that way the entire cook. And then when I started flipping it, I started them on the fat side down and started flipping them. And I started to get more consistency and less errors.
But your pit is designed in a way that really promotes that type of cooking. I mean, mm-hmm. yours is almost a vertical offset. Mm-hmm. As the airflow comes out, it's coming then straight out the top instead of yep. continuing out past and then exhausting once it gets past all mm-hmm. the meat. So mm-hmm. I thought like even direct cooking, like you might find in Atlanta, like at Cooper's or something, I thought those guys would be prime. That was a prime candidate to cook in that manner to keep that fat cap down because it uh-huh. would act as a protective layer.
Uh-huh.
That makes complete sense to me. I've never
right.
done it in a long offset horizontal, you know? Uh-huh. So mm-hmm. Now that you say that, I'm not surprised at all by your response, because it does make a lot of sense. And I think this is where equipment and process really comes into play. What does your process look like? Well, it depends on the equipment that you're using mm-hmm. and how it cooks and what the airflow is like. Mm-hmm. And if that's what dictates how heat is transferred, well, what's the best positioning for the meat inside of it to get the best results. You figured it out.
I hope you try it with one brisket the next time you cook. I'd love to hear your feedback.
I'll do it tomorrow. Just right. for the hell of it. I'll probably flip it midway through, because still most mm-hmm. of our heat comes across the top.
Okay.
But I'll do one for half of its naked run, right before mm-hmm. we wrap.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll get maybe about 5 hours, four hours. I'll try it and I'll report back.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm curious.
For sure.
Justin, what is your pit called anyway? Like, I've always wondered that. Is it a
name?
I've never seen anything like it.
Or design? Like, is there a name for the design or the style?
Yeah.
No.
Mm-mm. Dude, it's just like
it's very strange.
You know, our serving pit, it operates in a similar way where we cook our sausage, mm-hmm. that old
yeah.
upright. It's uh-huh. very similar. You got the firebox mm-hmm. off to the side. It's the hot air that's coming up from the bottom that's cooking all uh-huh. that, and it's exhausting uh-huh. upwards.
Uh-huh.
It's still an offset. It's just vertical.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a much wider chamber. I mean, you got a massive mm-hmm. wide chamber there. So the air's all kind of turbulent in there, I would think.
Yeah, I like to think that we don't have to rotate them as much. I mean, obviously we still have hot spots and stuff like that in the pit that we have to adjust for.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's a little bit more consistent. But I mean, honestly, I haven't spent a whole lot of time cooking on a traditional horizontal offset pit. I've only really cooked on our pits.
Where do you get those?
There was a guy that was an oil field welder in West Texas that was building these on trailers. And we bought several versions of those from him. And then the business disappeared. I found one that somebody was selling secondhand that I bought. And then there's a group in Dallas, a welder there, when we moved to the restaurant in Deep Ellum, that basically built a scaled up version of our trailer pits with the same proportions and all that kind of stuff using CAD and everything like that. And so they were able to reproduce those for us. So there's not like a manufacturer, like an official manufacturer. It's just kind of like our design that somebody builds for us.
Well, it sounds like a fucking business opportunity if I've ever heard one. I mean, everyone's selling their pits, and there's never seen some shit like yours before. No. You need to throw a Pecan Lodge logo on there and sell them on the website, dude.
Possibly, yeah.
Would you guys buy one? Tag us. Let us know. And Terry, thanks. We appreciate the message from Jack's Barbecue. Got us going. All right, here's the next one. This comes from Jordan. What's up, Jordan? This is Jordan Fraser, Jordyn. I think I know who this is. I see you, Jordan. Hey, y'all. I'm loving listening to the podcast. I'm really enjoying the interviews and the silly banter and fun. What silly banter? We're not silly ever. It makes me really miss Texas. Is there a history to barbecue? When I was in the craft beer industry, there was such a rich history of beer where different styles originated, techniques and brewing in different cultures, etc. Is there anything like that with Texas/American barbecue? Can y'all do an episode on that? Also, hi, Nick. Hi, Jordan. Love you guys and looking forward to the next episode. Well, we did touch on this a little bit on the very, very first episode that we ever did, which, to my knowledge, only a few minutes of that episode we have ever aired for various reasons, which we discussed earlier. But one of the things that has not been aired was a discussion about this very thing, about the history of barbecue, especially as it relates to Texas. So we're gonna move to our resident history correspondent Wayne Miller and get a special report about the history of Texas barbecue.
Yeah, I mean, Texas barbecue is just an extension of what man has been doing since he learned how to fucking domesticate fire, or as fire learned to domesticate man, I guess you would say. What makes Texas different than the rest of the country is the protein that we use. The first colonists came over, they brought chickens, but they brought a lot of pigs, and pigs don't need a lot of space. You can let them run wild. They could forage. They were just easier to deal with. Cattle, steers in particular, are big and bulky and require a lot of food, and they require a lot of water. And the culture that really had domesticated and brought forth cattle to America was Spain. Spain has a very deep and rich bovine history. I mean, you could see it reflected in bullfighting today, but you know, some of the top restaurants in the world use their beef from Spain, and they choose their beef differently than the way we do. You know, they go out and look for happy cows, and that's how they find the most tender meat. It's a crazy way to do things. But their history brought here first in Florida. The first vaqueros, the first cowboys, were in Florida. It was too swampy, though. Just there wasn't enough grassland, so they moved them to Mexico. And Mexico was a great place. It's just, it was so arid. So they bred cows that were, you know, drought resistant. The Longhorn cow is one such cattle. And they found that the grasslands from the Central Plains extended way down into Texas. Now, they had the Comanche to deal with, and the bison. But the idea was, you know, we can just run these cattle straight up into Nebraska. have them feed off of the grasslands. There's plenty of water and tributaries. Bring them back down, take them to market and fatten them up. And it was the primal source of protein. So Texas developed this methodology of cooking cattle rather than pigs. And that helped to, you know, distinguish the two types of barbecue as well. It was still peasant food. Pork is more of a texture medium. It requires some flavor enhancement. So you had all of these regional sauces that were brought over from the old country that were family traditions. I mean, they're that localized. There's that many different kinds of sauce recipes in the South and Southeast used to accent their pork offerings. In Texas, beef is different, man. Beef is robust. It can stand alone. So sauce really didn't become a thing with Texas style barbecue. The bigger difference is most people weren't putting a whole steer on some apparatus to cook it like you could a hog. So whole hog cooking just that's unique directly to our Southern brethren. We had to just take cuts, quarters, and things of that nature. There was also the amount of fat actually favored pigs early on because of the drought-resistant cattle that were being bred in Texas. They just didn't have a whole lot of fat, and they were all grass-fed. It was really the advent of feedlots that made Texas barbecue what it is. Because up through my early childhood, even maybe through high school, Select was about all that was used. It wasn't even a thing until the 1950s, because people were butchers. They had a meat market. They butchered either a half or a full carcass. You only get two briskets out of it. What they were cooking is what came out of the meat counter. It wasn't brisket. You might get a shoulder. You'd get a couple of shoulder clods. You'd get a couple of briskets. You'd get a whole lot of steaks, You'd make a whole lot of sausage. And that's the stuff. You had chickens to supplement. You had some pork ribs to supplement. But that's what the menu consisted of. The beef-centric nature really didn't come about. And the brisket being the flag of Texas barbecue came about when packers started sending this stuff out in boxed meats where you could order a whole case of this stuff all at once. That's when it really happened. And the offset really came about because of that meat cut. Because before that, you had mostly direct cook or more of what Justin is cooking on, a slight offset, but it was still a vertical. It was still a vertical cook. You just kept the firebox off away. It was only over time that the people started extending those offsets, making them longer and longer. And what they found is that with airflow and direction, brisket turned out to be the perfect meat to cook on that kind of apparatus. They developed in this symbiotic kind of way. Because of the airflow, because of the fat cap, because of the point on the brisket, you could just always angle that directly toward the firebox and keep your flat pushed away, always at the opposite end. And you could wind up cooking a brisket at multiple temperatures on one pit and without, at that time, having to move it around that much. So, you know, it was cheap. It was grind, man. It was hamburger. I mean, the only people who were doing anything with brisket at that time were Texans and Jews, right? That was it. The only people who dealt with it at all. You know, there was pastrami's in delis, but they were also Seder meals for Jewish families because they took all day to cook. In Texas, again, it was the longer process. You're cooking a lot of meat per square inch, as opposed to, say, a chicken.
Right.
And so over time, Texans figured out this offset way of cooking. You could actually make something highly just delicious. you know, delectable, that you could render out the fat, you could really soften up the meat, you could create a sliced product that is unlike anything else off of the cow. There's nothing else to compare, because in the South, people who were cooking that same brisket were cooking it directly from below, cooking it like a shoulder. It was still kind of tough and chewy. They chop it all up and throw some sauce on it, stick it on a bun, and call it a day. It was in Texas, in Central Texas in particular, that this sort of developed differently. And that was like under a veil for decades. And it started making its way out in the 90s, and by the late 2000s, you know, Aaron Franklin shows up on the scene. His process works beautifully with his homemade pits. And what happened was America then, for the first time, discovered brisket in the way that it's been cooked in Texas for, you know, 75 years. And so, you know, it changed what people thought barbecue was. Because before that, it was all pork, it was all sauces. Now, barbecue had a new identity. And unfortunately for our Southern brethren, they kind of had to take a back seat. And I think even now, they still do. It's had a longer run. It has a deeper history. But Texas-style barbecue is a premium product and a premium process. And there's more nuance, I think, than there is in cooking a pork shoulder or cooking pork ribs. And that takes nothing away from our Southern brethren. It simply means that what we do is different. We use live fire just like they do. We use big animals just like they do. It's just that the proteins react differently to that fire engagement, you know? So what we have today has gone through so many iterations over time that, you know, if you went back 100 years, none of this would be recognizable. None of it. Texans nothing would look the same. We wouldn't be doing what we're doing right now. So it is fairly a new incarnation. And you have to think, those same motherfuckers who are gouging the shit out of us on brisket prices for making it possible. How's that, JBS? You know?
Yeah, I'm just going to say that part out loud. Fuck you, JBS.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was headed with that.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for the memories, but goddamn, man.
Well, as expected, thank you for that thoroughly educational, amazing answer, Wayne. And Jordan, thanks for the question.
Thanks,
maybe
Jordan.
we will have to have a multi-part series about the history of barbecue. Maybe everyone should know. Maybe I should know. I definitely should know more about it. This is a big one. This is from Benjamin Garcia. Hey guys, I've been a huge barbecue fan for as long as I can remember. My dad grilled nearly every weekend, burgers, sausage, wings, all the good stuff. On occasion, he'd borrow a smoker from a buddy of his and do smoked turkey and an occasional brisket. I'd love to know more about what it takes to work in a barbecue restaurant. What do you guys look for in a staff member or a cook? For sure, hardworking, etc. But what's the stuff you really look for? I love to cook, and I see that's my passion, but any help or suggestions would be appreciated. Thank y'all so much, Benjamin Garcia. First and foremost, Benjamin Garcia, you should go get a job at Louis Mueller Barbecue and Taylor and learn from the best.
Yeah, it takes, you know, it's a unique individual that does what we do.
For sure.
It is not for everybody. And so many people wanted to make it about, you know, they thought they could do this sort of thing when brisket and Texas style barbecue was really at its peak 10 years ago. And almost all of them flame out. They just don't realize what goes into this? And you have to be willing to sacrifice part of yourself to go to do this, because it's unlike any sort of kitchen environment you'll ever be in. And
truly,
you burn the shit out of yourself on the daily. You'll cut yourself quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And you cuss a lot, and you know, and it's not nearly as precise as any French trained kitchen operation you'll ever be in. Because for one, you have to be the thermostat. And it may be the hardest thing I teach people to do is how to properly manage a fire. You know, because if you can't do that, then the product is just not going to be consistent. Mm-hmm. It's going to suck. So, I mean, if you don't have the patience for that, and if you don't have a certain, I think beyond reverence, but I don't know, affinity for fire, a certain like true interest in what fire is, mm-hmm. Then you're just going to take it for granted. And that's going to be your first mistake. So if you can't do that, if you don't have the patience for that, then nothing else is going to work for you. You know, I'm sure you guys feel something similar to that, right?
Yeah, that passion for what you're doing is important, you know, 100% attention to detail. I mean, a lot of the basic things, but it's a little bit different if you're back there cooking.
Right. And it's not like baking where you can say you're putting something in at 375 for 25 minutes and then you're pulling it out and you know you're not, it's not like that at all, because no two briskets are the same, no two fires the same, no two pit guys are the same, no two weather conditions are the same, wind direction, humidity, barometric pressure, wood, how seasoned it is,
wood,
none of those things are the same day to day. And
the animal itself.
Oh, for sure. Like, even side to side, dude.
Right.
It's the variation is so great that you have to be that attention to detail is priceless, because it's the nuance there that will take the consistency of your product from being, you know, a range from A to C grade level to try to hold it encapsulate it within an A range, right? I mean, it's the only thing that you can do to make that possible. Temping at, I pull at 202, I pull at 197, it's like, I don't give a shit. I mean, it doesn't matter to me. Temperature is a range. It just tells you you're getting close to the drop zone.
Yeah.
And if you don't get the right tension down, and that's based on size. Right. So you're pulling a small brisket sooner. It's going to be have a little more tension in it than a big brisket does that maybe 1.5 times its size, maybe in some cases twice its size, that has so much more fat in it, so much more to break down and convert. They're not going to have the same tension. So you have to learn all of that. And then you have to baseline each of these different size categories. If you're not standardized, for you know, that whole gradient scale. So it's people think it's easy, and it's just like it's not.
Well, and then there's the whole other side of that. Say you do get all of that down and you're a hell of a cook, but if you don't understand what it takes to work in a restaurant, just from the sense of you got to get along with other people, you got to understand what it takes to interface with customers and deploy the hospitality. I mean, we're in the restaurant business. It doesn't matter what kind of restaurant that it is. Dealing with customers and pleasing your customers outside of from the food being good is just the whole point of why we do what we do. You have to be able to take care of somebody in a way that is just beyond handing them good food. It's the experience involves, you know, the rapport. So, and then you have to also understand how to, you know, just deal with the aspects of being in the business. Like, how does a business run? Which I know that the questions are just about what do we look for as far as someone working in a barbecue restaurant? But I think all that matters. You gotta get along. You gotta know how to take care of the people you work with and the people who are coming in your restaurant. And I guess as far as your job, if you're a cook, you gotta know how to be a good cook or be a good cashier, and you gotta smile and say, "Hey, how's it going?" and "Thank you so much," and all of those things, genuinely, to for all that to work. And I like working with people who may not have experience in the restaurant business or specifically to what we do, because that means that we get to kind of get to show them our way of doing things. To me, it's all about just someone's attitude. I can teach them to do any manner of these things, but if the person doesn't have a heart for service or a kind heart, someone who cares, you can't teach someone that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have to care.
You got to care.
Yeah.
I know that everyone thinks that we don't care and we're just trying to ruin people's days by giving them that crappy store-bought white bread and your shitty gravy onion water.
God, I'm so hungry right now. All I'm thinking about is a piece of bread and some of that gravy. I would kill for that right now.
Yeah, man, it's so true. You can't teach people to care. And I really do, except in the kitchen. I really look for a little bit more experience, just people who understand what a kitchen is and how to, you know, food safety, language, knife use, whatever. But front of house, it's like, I can't teach you to care. No matter how much I've tried, it's you do or you don't. And so recruiting for personality and personality traits becomes, I think, a premium, especially with guest interface positions, you know? But if the kitchen's the same way, I mean, generally I have found like people who come through or did come through culinary programs, that was a huge recruiting ground for me for a long time. They had a different view on food. Right. Food was an extension of them. It was an extension of their desire, not only to please, but to create. This was their creation. This was they saw themselves as artisans in that way. And so caring was an essential component of that. Right. It was almost inherent in what they were doing. I don't see that as much now, which makes it more difficult to find people in my kitchen to do what I want them to do or what I need them to do, because they just lack that understanding, that caring component. Now it's just check a box. I did that task, check, did that task, check, did that, check. And, you know, there's places in the world for that.
Did
you care? Yeah, it's... There's no real box for it, you know? No, I don't give a shit, dude. Can't you tell? Yes, I can tell. I can tell. And it's not like I just had a bad day. I'm hungover. I just fought with my girlfriend. I locked my keys in my car. I ran over a deer. It's none of those things, right? It's truly like I really want to put myself into this because this is me. That's me that I'm putting out there.
Mm-hmm.
You got to find that in people.
Well, Benjamin, good luck. I would recommend getting the book Unreasonable Hospitality. It's just a great book. Setting the Table by Danny Meyer. Unreasonable Hospitality is Will Gudera, who comes from the lineage of Danny Meyer. Two great books about hospitality and about what it's like working in a restaurant and going through the evolution of a restaurant, trying to be the best restaurant in the entire world. I think the story resonates with people outside of the restaurant industry too, just about hospitality in general that can be used in pretty much any job. You know, most jobs these days, you're trying to take care of somebody. You're trying to make somebody happy in some way. So I say, check out those two books. Great place to start. Thanks for the question, Benjamin. Thanks for listening. super duper appreciate all y'all. Jordan, Benjamin, Terry, Jason, thanks for the questions. You guys shoot us an email, hello@smokelesspodcast.com, or you can tag us in socials. We'll see it. We'll holler at you. All right. Are you guys ready for another edition of Plate or Hate? Guys, if you want us to plate or hate your cook, simply tag us on Instagram. Our handle is @smokeless_podcast. You should be over there and all over that anyway. But if you want us to love or hate on your plate, again, tag us. And we're going to get on to our first submission here from Terry Smith, Iron and Oak Barbecues. Hey guys, I'm a big fan of the podcast. I'm inspired to have my own barbecue business, not a restaurant, just doing pop-ups and catering and events. I have such a big passion and love for barbecue. Even on the long days, on hot or cold days, I still enjoy doing it. Thank you guys for all you do. I know it sucks at sometimes, but I truly appreciate what you guys do. I will attach some pictures of my food. Would be awesome to have some feedback. Thanks, Terry Smith at Iron and Oak Barbecue. I think we discerned that that's possibly in Justin's neck of the woods.
I'm pretty sure I've been here before in Asheville. I think they were doing a pop-up. They had a little spot down by the river there.
Down by the river.
Yeah.
So here's a brisket.
Not in the van.
They cooked this in the van down by the river. It's kind of a little fat brisket there. And then I think here is a board with that brisket. It says turkey, but looks like the turkey's hidden back over there in a pan. Looks like that this is the brisket on the board. What do you think about
these two photos, the whole brisket and then the slice piece?
Yeah, that's all we got. We got the brisket from this perspective. I don't have my glasses on, but it looks maybe a little crunchy over there. But
one of the edges. It's hard to tell from an unsliced brisket exactly.
Yeah.
This looks it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I see a lot of juices on the board. That's always a good sign.
Yeah, you gotta have a juicy board.
I don't
see anything that to hate on about it.
Uh-uh.
I think the proof would be in the pudding. I need one of those little bird ends you cut off over there.
I like those little two bites in the back right there, or kind of by the knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd eat that right now for sure.
this whole time, Justin's been talking about how hungry he is. Which is going to maybe work in Terry's favor and everybody else's favor.
What's sad is I didn't go to the bathroom. I had to get a snack.
All right. Well, what'd you get for a snack?
A spoonful of peanut butter and half a pickle.
like a whole pickle?
Well, I made tuna fish earlier, so there's half a pickle on the cutting board.
Justin, are you pregnant?
Well, I don't know. At this point, nothing would surprise me. So
was it a dill pickle, like a straight, like a best made?
I thought you were going somewhere else.
What kind of
pickle? It was a dill pickle. It was a garlic dill pickle, for that matter. It was good.
I'd plate that.
Yeah.
Terry, I'd plate this brisket too.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good job.
Keep it up. That's a nice cutting board too. All right. Next. Doug. Oh, I know Doug.
You know Doug. You actually know him?
I actually know Doug. And I remember when he sent me this picture the first time. I think he sent it or he posted it on Facebook.
But you know Doug, like, personally, or you know him because he already sent something to you?
No, I know Doug personally.
Okay.
Doug lives in Tyler, Texas.
Okay.
And I think I gave Doug some shit about cutting this brisket with the grain.
I was going to say, he's cutting with the grain.
That stood out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Good smoke grain.
He says, I said, hey, man, looks good, but next time you want to slice it against the grain.
Can you imagine how much differently that brisket would eat if it had been cut across the grain compared to, it would be a completely different experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
But this was Doug's, I think, first brisket.
Bark looks good. Smoke ring looks good.
It looks maybe
tender.
Maybe, maybe Doug's briskets are better these days. And I love you, Doug, but just based on it, I got to hate on it a little bit on the cut, but you know, I love you, brother, but yeah, you got to cut it the right way.
I mean, I don't want to be the one to say it, but it's a little bit dry.
Yeah.
It's a little dry.
Looks a little dry.
If you haven't cooked a bunch of briskets, it's a process. You have to go through this. You narrow down variables and you adjust those variables and you keep cooking and eventually you get to where you need to be.
To be honest, I also feel like that maybe if there was a filter on this at all, that it may have made it look a little worse than it probably is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, my first brisket didn't, I don't know how many briskets in this is, but I've cooked a lot of briskets. It didn't look that good.
That's for sure. I'll never forget the brisket that I had to hide at 5 o'clock in the morning and go throw it in the river behind my father-in-law's house. Like, what happened to that brisket? I was like, I don't know, man. Something came and stole it in the middle of the night, I guess.
Part of the reason this may look dry also is it may be a little cool.
Yeah. True.
I mean, I'm looking at the fat and just how white this fat is.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like it may be really cool. And if that's going to be the case, then it's going to give that brisket a really dry look to it. So timing here may be playing a part as well.
That's a really good point because there's a really, really small window once you slice that brisket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it discolors, it oxidizes, you know, mm-hmm. it gets brown. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long, especially on that lean end. Anything that is not coated in fat, you know?
God, that's the thing. You have people coming to the restaurant taking photos of the food. And that's the part that always drives me crazy the most, you know, because you're setting it up and you're getting it just right and you're slicing it and everything. And then they're like, you know, jacking around with like their filters and you're like, listen, you had to take that photo 2 minutes ago. Now what are we going to do? Go slicing with the brisket? You know, I mean,
it's so true.
I mean, seriously, I mean,
that's when you need your stylist in you to come out and always have some like olive oil standing by in a squirt bottle. That you can coat that stuff so it doesn't discolor on you, right? You don't eat it necessarily afterwards, but man, shooting food is just the hardest shit.
It really is.
People talk about like, oh, social media. It's not just social media. I mean, you have to be a social media expert. You have to be a food stylist. You have to be a photographer. You have to be a copywriter. You have to be a graphic designer.
Yeah, Benjamin, remember, you got to be all those things and a good cook, and you have to be nice to people.
Yeah.
And learn how to control your cost.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, my God. Learn prime cost.
It's something that me and my whole team live and die by, prime cost weekly. Got to do, people say, do prime cost every month. No.
No.
Prime cost every week.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Doug, thanks for the submission.
Keep going, buddy.
Keep going.
Yeah. Don't stop here. Get yourself some momentum.
And don't cut with the grain next time. I'm sure that was probably the only time. All right, here we go. Here's the next one. Oh, damn.
Damn. Yeah.
All right. I see a little fried egg under there. There's some, is that shallots or is that just red onion?
Red onions?
I think it's red onion.
Pickled?
It looks,
or is it like shallot-y? A chimichurri? There's like some green, like there's like some kind of like pickled onion relish.
There's definitely some cheese under there.
That brisket looks legit.
It really does. I was going to say that bark on that brisket needs to get inside my face right now. This whole thing does.
I mean, honestly, I always see these sandwiches made with biscuits. I've never seen anybody put one just like on bread like this, but this is.
That looks like some kind of yummy sourdough toast or brioche toast or something.
Yeah.
This is this from? There's no details about cooks or what it is, but it's from HGH Power. Shout out to HGH Power.
Yeah,
I'm going to need to know more about this. This is definitely going on my plate and then not for very long because it's going straight inside my face.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
That looks good as hell, bro.
Yeah, well done. Damn.
Oh, also from HGH Power, we're going to We can't play the audio, but I'm giving you a shout out for that Deborah Cox soundtrack in the back. I see you.
Oh, look at there. That is pretty dang good, honestly. You see those onions like that? It makes me wonder if this guy's from Texas or if he's from someplace else. Yeah. I would guess Texas with the butcher paper and the onions.
Pickled onions.
Yeah. There's like a little bit of jalapeno maybe right there.
It looks like some straight up homemade actual pickles right there on the left. You could just barely get a glimpse of pickles? That. I mean, that's kind of what it looked like. I saw a corner of a pickle for half a second, but it looks like a legit homemade pickle.
Those ribs, like they were cooked pretty perfectly. But you're the rib expert, Nick.
Not really, but I'm hungry, and that looks like a good damn rib.
You'd put that bone in your mouth?
Set myself up. I would. HGH Power, put that bone in my mouth, son. Let's do that. And keep that soundtrack going in the back, too. I hear you, Deborah Cox. We're not allowed to play the audio because we'll get in trouble on YouTube.
This guy's probably a pastor at a church. That's higher power is probably what that is.
Hey, well, then more power.
Or Snoop, one of the two.
That'd be cool. This is Snoop's barbecue alias, like Dave Grohl's got a barbecue alias.
Oh, does he really?
Yeah. I have his t-shirt.
Sweet.
But Dave, yeah. Backbeat barbecue is Dave Grohl's thing.
Wow.
All right, here's the next one. Holy shit.
Oh, beef rib.
It's a Louis Mueller inspired beef rib. So obviously we're going to have to let Wayne Miller go for this one.
It looks really nice. I don't see a whole lot. I mean, depending on when this picture was taken after you cut it, it's not overcooked. It's not deflated. I still see there's plenty of fat content mixed in with the muscle tissue. Your membrane on the bottom looks like it's charred up pretty nicely. I don't know, man. That looks pretty good. I'd like to try it. I'd like to stick my face in it and pull out a big old mouthful.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're supposed to do with those things. You're supposed
Daniel Vaughn's calling me right now. Should I answer that?
You're supposed to wear it.
Patch him in, Nick.
Hello.
Nick, how are you?
What's up, Daniel? I'm taping an episode of Smokeless right now.
Oh, I'm sorry. No. I'll let you get back to it.
You never know who's going to drop in our podcast.
That's right.
No, man, I think this, you know, going just by the picture, yeah, I would definitely plate this.
Yeah, I would too.
Nice job.
I would like to know more about, we need some more details though, if you guys are going to tag us. Tell us how it was cooked. What'd you cook it on? What'd you cook it with? Try to fill us in on as much details.
What the hell? Oh, that thing. God.
That was the craziest thing, man.
I'd never seen anything like that before.
No, this weird ass thing that looked like an alien brisket.
Mm-hmm.
I just, all the cuts on it were just bizarre.
How did that come from this?
That you did an incredible job. This guy did an incredible job trimming that, because I don't know how you get to what we saw as a finished product from this. Looks good.
Wearing a poncho outdoor shirt. Nice. Oh, snap.
God.
So this was the shout out to Burnt Bean.
Burnt Bean.
The strawberry jam with the brisket and the egg on the croissant. Lord have mercy. Yeah, fuck this guy, whoever he is. I'm kidding. Of course, this is from our producer, Vic Berry, way from Ireland.
The croissant, it's a nice touch. It's the that perfect really shape is. For a slice of brisket, you know? I mean, you have to kind of like finagle things to get it on the biscuit, but a croissant.
This looks like it looks to me like it looks like a chicken. It looks like someone's holding a chicken by its wingtips, but that's somehow a brisket.
Yeah, I'm seeing a leg quarter right there, thigh and leg.
That looks like the arm emoji. Like
that is, I wouldn't even know what to do with that.
You did a hell of a job, Vic Berry. jalapeno cream cheese, strawberry jam, fried eggs, some smoked salt on that yummy croissant.
I'm not lying. I'm going to go get some croissants tomorrow and try this.
Yep, I'm plating it. And I'm also just giving you giant props for figuring out what to do with that. Wayne in the group text was like, thought it was a shoulder clod, and that made a lot of sense. But
That was, I don't even know how I got into that condition, you know? Oh, speaking of which, did you hear? Did you hear? So the processing plants have a time limit on how much product comes through the line over a duration of time.
No.
And they're limiting how much can come through the line at a time. Now, apparently those time restrictions are being lifted, meaning that the packers are now going to require more product to come through the line in the same amount of time. So if you thought the butchering was bad before,
oh my God.
God.
Not only that, but the people who work there, can you imagine? They're going to be missing like whole arms and hands and fingers and God only knows what else. Because if you've never gone to a packing plant and seen the breakdown lines, I mean, they've got every kind of knife imaginable. They got chainsaws. They got all Oh yeah, dude. And they're on these like guides. And so they're like shoulder to shoulder with each other, and they're just ripping shit apart. I mean, it is the craziest thing you've ever seen. And now they're expecting more, 1.5, more, 2 times, faster, 3 times as much product going down the line.
That's psycho.
Oh my God. It is psycho. I can hardly imagine. I mean, I bitch enough about the briskets that we get sometime. I can only imagine what this is going to look like in the upcoming months.
So that's, they shut down facilities and then push the volume through the other ones.
Mm.
Basically is what they've done.
Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers to all those
packer all those workers. No kidding.
Working in the, there was a strike at some point. I meant to talk to you guys about that, but that was a long time ago. We were group texting about it. Some people went on strike, but I hadn't heard anything about that since.
Uh-huh.
It was a JBS plan, I think.
They probably just replaced them all.
Yeah.
Was it JBS or was it a Tyson?
I don't know. That was a long time ago, I feel like. Which, you know, long time, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. These cycles are shortening.
Well, guys, thanks for sending in your shots and your questions. Want to give a shout out to Sam Jones for trying but not feeling well. We hope you get to feeling well, buddy, and we'll get you on here whenever we can reschedule. You know, we want to thank Willie Nelson and Willie's Remedy. Y'all go to drinkwillies.com, check it out. And as always, Goldbelly, goldbelly.com. We're going to give you guys $20 off your first order. Here's the code. Go to goldbelly.com, $20 off. Get some barbecue from Pecan Lodge, Stanley's Famous, or Louis Miller. Support us. We appreciate it.
Show them
very, very. Yeah. Thank you so much. We want to see Justin smiling, right? Let's keep that smile on, that handsome smile on Justin's face. Buy from Goldbelly, and we can keep smiling, and we can keep doing this podcast. If you guys don't go to Goldbelly, you know, Smokeless is going to have to shut down. Probably not. We're already all paying a lot of money out of pocket to do this, to just talk to each other every week. We could just be on FaceTime. So hopefully you guys are enjoying it. We're enjoying it. This is our therapy session. Thanks for jumping in and listening to us. And, you know what? The coming episodes after this coming up is going to be our 1 year anniversary. You guys, can you believe it?
No,
that's awesome.
I can't believe that at all.
Oh no, it's super nuts. Doesn't seem like it, but I'm glad that we made it. That's going to mean that we're officially going to change over to season 2, episode 1.
Oh, that's right.
What are we going to do for our 1 year anniversary episode? What should we do, you guys? Who should we talk to? We'll probably just end up talking to each other.
Well, I mean, we've tried everybody else. I guess we could reach out to Dave Grohl and see if he'd want to join, but, you know, only as like a last backup, the very last option.
Well, we'll consider it. Dave, if you're listening, give us a call. I'd love to chat about barbecue. Well, you guys, thanks for listening. Y'all take care of yourselves. And until next time, see, this would be cool if we had like, what's our slogan? Like, what's our thing? What's our catchphrase? We need a catchphrase, guys.
Oh,
shoot us an email at hello@spokespodcast.com. We need a catchphrase. We have theme music. It's always on for just a second, but
wait, we do have theme music.
We do. Yeah.
That's right.
It's just there for a minute, but it's the same one. We own the rights to that music. We paid for it fair and square. I'm blabbing.
Sometimes I wish I could hear the theme music when we start the recordings just to kind of like get me in the zone a little bit, you know, like focused.
We can arrange that, brother.
I mean, just like,
we can arrange that. Oh. We can do it. I love that where you went there. Well, thanks for joining us again, as always. And we'll see you next time. Cue the theme music.